cutlasses slung, 12,000 horse, foot, and guns bound for the heart of darkness, at a cost of £333 a man, each of whom had recently received a rise in pay of tuppence per diem. And all to rescue a handful of Britons from a savage prison at the back of beyond. Aye, those were the days. We'd been 3 nights on the road and 2 days in the saddle when we reached Attacrat, and learned that Napier was still up ahead, awaiting the King of Tigray, who was said to have overcome his fears and was expected any day. This news had Speedy and Henty off at the gallop, one to do his diplomatic duty, t'other athirst for copy. I was left to see the silver delivered to the paymaster, and to follow at my leisure. Another day a horseback in the heat, but since no one knew if or when Napier would return to Attacrat, there was nothing else for it. Attacrat's a shallow valley 2 miles across, and the tents of our main force, 4,000 to 5,000 British and Indian troops, were strung out along the valley side, all mighty klim-blim and orderly compared to the frog's knapsack at Zula. Trust Napier. He'd always had an eye like a gimlet and a knack of being into everything. Not that he was a martinet, but it all had to be just so for him. Being off station, he could hardly be blamed for the piece of disciplinary folly I saw on my way to the paymaster's tent. A native driver, bare to the waist and tied to a gun wheel, was being flogged in a half-hearted way, and for once the off-duty loafers who'd assembled to watch the sport were encouraging the flogger to go easy and voicing sympathy for the floggee. It transpired that the unfortunate nigger had dared to shoot and wound an Ab robber who'd been trying to despoil him at pistol point, and for this he'd been awarded 12 lashes. Well, I'm all for a hearty flogging myself, but this seemed to be a poor excuse, and I learned from a disgusted paymaster that it had been ordered only because Krapf, an idiot clergyman who'd attached himself to the expedition as an expert, had convinced the provost marshal, another idiot, that there would be a native uprising if the Abs weren't placated by having the driver whipped.
"Wait until the chief hears about this," fumes my informant. "We're far too soft with these blasted savages, giving in to the bastards every time, and a wretched city is thrashed for nothing. Well, I just hope that next time he lets himself be robbed and bills that clown crap for the loss. Depend upon it, these damn people despise us as weaklings, and they'll become insolent to the point of fighting us if we don't show who's master."
I was glad to be shot of the silver. An uncomfortable responsibility when it was being carried by that troop of thieving blackguards. Their reluctance to part with their saddlebags was pitiful to see. In all modesty, I believe that their respect for Bloody Lance was what had stopped the villains from trying to filch the odd dollar. It was all tallied out on the paymaster's table, and since he'd been informed by signal that the rest was coming up, he made out a receipt to be handed over on its arrival. I haven't had it yet. Napier was to meet his princely savage at a place called Mai de Ha, a short day's ride ahead. So, with the Sindhis as escort, I set off after tiffin across the valley and past the collection of huts that makes up Attacrat village. There's a church and a ruined palace, but what takes the eye is the veritable Bluebeard's castle perched on an eminence high above the valley, a massive keep with 4 great turrets at each corner. A sinister sight, even in broad day, grim and forbidding behind its curtain wall. Our way wound through the hills into a desolation where we began to see all the signs of civil war and spoiling, with villages ruined and abandoned, burned huts, fallow fields, and hardly a living creature except at a distance. The villages, still inhabited, were all on rising ground, stoutly walled, and on every peak there was a stark adobe tower, after the style of the one at Attacrat. Some were a good 50 feet high, and of 5 or 6 story, built on the lips of precipices, crouched like vultures over the valleys below. A proper simile, for my Havildar explained that these were the holds of robber barons, who preyed on the countryside. And between them and the slave-raiding Gallas from the south, the peasantry had a deuce-thin time. It reminded him, he said cheerfully, of home, that blessed frontier where honest chaps live by pillage and extortion, and only the interfering British Sirkar to mar the idyll. I pointed out that the Sirkar also paid the wages of him and his fellow thieves when they took a holiday from crime, and he admitted that we had our use.